Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of all faiths for leadership and policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host, Scott Utnip, and Texas Impact's Outreach Director. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be a function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to healthcare are just one piece of the puzzle. And health equity should be a primary concern for faith communities because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, so we're well positioned to understand the connections between many inputs that impact health, like access to healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things that we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status. We hope that this podcast series inspires you to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so that you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. And I'm excited and honored to be joined by today's guest, Tanika Duhaney, who is a service member and Health and Aging Policy Fellow at Columbia University. Tanika is the Department Head of Patient Administration for a Naval Health Clinic. Tanika, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. So why don't you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? And I'm particularly interested in your career trajectory. It seems like you became an oral health professional in the course of your military service. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So during my military career, next month I'll actually make 20 years of active duty service.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I've spent more than 10 of those years focused on oral health of service members and dependents. I started as a dental assistant, and I saw firsthand the impact that good oral health has on sailors and Marines, actually while deployed in theater during Operation Enduring Freedom. I've also had the opportunity to be stationed near the U.S.-Mexico border during a period of the National Guard mobilization to supplement Border Patrol. And many of the Guardsmen mobilized had significant periods without dental care, which resulted in tooth and bone loss. And having the opportunity to assist them in their oral health road to recovery was very instrumental.
All right. So this podcast series is, first of all, I guess, thank you for your service, both in terms of your service to our country, but also to providing care for those who are providing that service for us each and every day. So thank you. So this podcast series is focusing on health equity in Texas. And health equity is a term that we're hearing a lot about lately, but it's still unfamiliar to a lot of people. I wonder if you can help get us started by defining our terms. So what exactly is health equity?
So after doing a broad range of reviews, I think the one consensus is there's no one definition of health equity. A number of organizations have worked to define health equity in relative terms that can still be confusing to many Americans. However, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's definition of health equity gets to the heart of the matter, pretty much meaning that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And so in order for us to get to that health, optimal health, this requires removing obstacles to health, such as poverty, discrimination, and their circumstances, including powerlessness, and lack of access to good jobs with fair pay, quality education and housing, fair environments, and healthcare.
So health equity has kind of an academic ring to it, and I know you've done a lot of work in the academic realm. Do you think the concept of health equity is penetrating the mainstream American consciousness? And what can policy wonks do to help make health equity into more of a kitchen table issue?
Well, I think health equity is actually penetrating American consciousness, more so in maybe a subconscious manner. Health equity is a kitchen table issue, and over time it has become more familiar as partisan politics highlights stark differences between those who have and those who don't have. So families, neighbors, and friends all discuss health equity on an ongoing basis. However, they're probably not using the term health equity to define their conversations. And policy wonks can probably utilize maybe individual situations or scenarios to best tie health equity to situations. So when individuals are having conversations, they can recognize that they are actually elevating the issue of health equity.
Do you think it's important that those of us in the advocacy realm and those of us who are, well, I guess in any realm, start to use that language?
I think it is important because oftentimes there are other health factors that we're defining, say health disparities, and you can't talk about one without the other. So overall, tying them together, identifying what health equity is and tying it to someone's life makes it a lot more important, because when we go to vote, when we go to advocate, the long explanation of any particular thing that we are for or against won't necessarily fit on a ballot or fit on a poster. Whereas health equity, you've got two words, and we all know what it means.
Right. So you focused a lot on the intersection between veterans and oral health. How is health equity a concern for veterans? As well as, I guess you're also working a lot with active duty personnel. So how does this intersect with both veterans and active duty personnel and their families?
Well, as far as veterans are concerned, veterans are a distinctly unique population, and veterans face tremendous health equity concerns based on ranges with the sexes. Female veterans are a significantly smaller portion of the population. And so as late as fiscal year 13, so around 2012, women were less than 20% of the Veterans Home Administration patients. The VA has taken several strides to address issues when it comes to female patients. And so they've increased available services for female-specific issues so that female veterans can access care. Many veterans also live in rural areas. Over a third of veterans serviced by the Veterans Home Administration live in rural areas. As a result, veterans 65 and older are more likely to live in rural areas. And because they're so far removed from where hospitals, urgent cares, and regular medical care would be available, they have access to care issues. They have transportation issues. They're not able to see. Let's not even talk about specialty care. They may not even be able to access general providers to be able to address some of the chronic illnesses that they may have. Veterans also have a higher rate of mental illness compared to the general population. And there are many more veterans who have undiagnosed conditions. Any statistics that the VA have are going to be based on the veterans who are seeking care at that time. But overall, only about 50% of veterans actually access the VA healthcare system.
Why don't we take a quick break so we can say thanks to our sponsors.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant-making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, we hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
So, Tanika, thanks for staying with us. I wonder if you can talk to us for just a second about what is distinctive about Texas with respect to health equity and how we compare with other states.
So, Texas is a behemoth with a population of about 29 million people and a $1.8 trillion economy. Texas rivals many countries, but it faces many challenges in relation to health equity when compared to neighboring states. For example, earlier this summer, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals heard the case of Texas versus the U.S., where lawyers for Texas and several other states argued to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. As we know, the Affordable Care Act extends health care to a large swath of the population who were chronically underinsured or uninsured. Additionally, Texas has the highest number and the highest rate of uninsured population across the country. There are about 4.7 million uninsured adults, and 19% of Texas residents under age 65 are underinsured. Greater than that, one in five uninsured children live in Texas. Not one in five children in Texas, but one in five uninsured children in the country actually reside in Texas.
Wow.
So just taking that into consideration, we can look at that snapshot to see where things are. Well, it actually gets a little worse. About 33% of the adult Texan population are obese, and we're mostly familiar with many of the chronic issues that go along with obesity. Moreover, women lack of access to regular preventive, primary, and specialty care before and after pregnancy contributes to Texas' high rate of poor maternal health outcomes. Unfortunately, Texas has one of the worst maternal mortality rates in the country, at 34.2 deaths per 100,000 births. That's a 9% increase since 2016. So we can't argue to say that this is going in the wrong direction with all the technological advances and health improvements that we've seen since 2016. Additionally, Texas ranks 47 in the number of primary care providers in the country. So we need to do much more to attract primary care providers to the state of Texas. One of the greatest concerns is that Texas has not expanded Medicaid. This leaves a significant portion of the working poor uninsured. They make too much to qualify for assistance, yet they may not make enough to be able to afford health insurance on their own. Additionally, diabetes rates have increased and immunization rates have decreased. And to cap it off, Texas public health funding is quite low. Texas spends approximately $65 per person in public health compared to top states that invest $250 per person for public health sources. So compared to other states, Texas struggles in a variety of categories, but they are making strides across the state. As I mentioned earlier, veteran homelessness is an issue which impacts that portion of the population. It's great to know that in Abilene, Texas, Abilene is one of 8 communities across the country that has actually eradicated chronic veteran homelessness.
Way to go, Abilene.
Way to go, Abilene, indeed. There are several organizations across the state that are working to improve access of health care, primarily maternal health and reducing childhood mortality rates. Now, these are mostly in the infant stages, and most of the work that are being done are by advocates and community organizations.
Yeah, so most of that really depressed me, so thank you for a couple of high points there at the end. And I guess on behalf of Texas to the rest of the country, sorry about the lawsuit. You did leave us with a moment of hope there at the end. I wonder if after all of that depressing news about all of the work we have to continue to do, if there's something that's providing you hope in regards to health equity and the future of health equity in this country. What kind of changes have you been seeing or what provides you hope on this issue?
Well, one thing that provides me hope is even though Texas has not expanded Medicaid, several states across the country are expanding Medicaid. And so with an increase in momentum, states are able to collect data through pilot programs and existing programs to identify how reduced rates of emergency room admissions impact costs, how impacts to expansion of Medicaid reduces chronic diseases such as diabetes, high cholesterol, and other illnesses that would otherwise be poorly managed if they were not supplemented with Medicaid. The 22 to 64 population, working age adults who are no longer on parental insurance, but they also don't qualify for Medicare as yet. There are several organizations that are working to educate that population because those are the individuals who typically don't have health care on their own or feel that they are healthy enough to not need health care. Unfortunately, due to this population not seeking health care more proactively, health situations arise and oftentimes end up being more expensive to treat in the long term by being managed early on.
So you've talked about Medicaid, you've talked about some legislative solutions. Are there steps that people can take to improve equity in their own community, or should we really be focusing on legislative solutions?
Oh, we should definitely focus on legislative solutions. But as far as what steps individuals can take in their own community, they can do a lot of advocacy, a lot of volunteering, and also getting involved in understanding how health equity impacts their current community. We're often far removed from the situation because we may not be impacted by a disparity. However, in getting involved in the community, individuals are able to have a greater exposure to the disparities that exist within the community. Based on that, individuals can capitalize and advocate for legislation to change the current course of trajectory in their community and for their state.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, our target audience is our communities of faith. And so it seems to me that every congregation has people who are impacted by health inequity in some way or another. And so really getting to know the stories of people in your own congregation, volunteering, like you said, and getting involved in community organizations should help you understand those issues a little better and allow you to advocate or to allow you and your congregation to find solutions, right?
Oh, certainly. And faith-based organizations are especially strong family ties, strong community involvement, and oftentimes they may not be able to take someone, you know, under their wing in one manner, but they may be the ride to the hospital, or they may know a specialist that focuses on a particular condition. Individuals often are far removed. They don't know who to seek out. And oftentimes when a situation arises, they go to the first available, which may not be the cheapest. It may not be the best. However, when we have a health scare, we want to make sure that it's taken care of immediately.
So if you could ask listeners to take one action today for health equity, what would that action be?
That action would be to engage in the community, focus on organizations within the community that are intentionally identifying health disparities within the area. So it could be maternal mortality organizations, such as March of Dimes. They're a large organization. It could be an organization that's focused on early childhood oral health. There are several organizations throughout Texas that individuals can get involved with and volunteer with. Communities should also be focused on really identifying the agenda of politicians. We all have our particular sides that we agree with. But there may be aspects of the agenda that until you take a deep dive, you don't know what's going on or what that politician's position is on that issue.
Yeah, and also feel like, you know, across the spectrum, representatives care about the health and well-being of people in their community, especially veterans and moms and lots of different kinds of groups. So engage in those conversations with all of the candidates and elected officials, especially this time of year when they're asking for votes for the next 12 months or so. So this is a great opportunity to have those conversations with people. Tanika, anything else you feel like you need to add to the conversation to help folks better understand health equity? Or did we exhaust you?
No. At the end of the day, I think health equity comes down to what is it that helps you to live your best life, what provides you optimal health. And if what provides you optimal health is lacking for your neighbor, they may not be living their best life and may not have optimal health. And so in being for or against a particular policy to extend Medicare to Medicaid to a particular swath of the population, increase in taxes, things like that. It's a community-focused matter. And for one person, it may impact their wallet. For the other person, it may impact their health.
Right. Well, anything you'd like to shamelessly plug today?
I would like to plug your show, Scott.
Oh, look at you. That was very kind. That's why you're my favorite today. Tanika, thank you so much for joining us today. But more importantly than that, I say this a lot, but especially here, right? Thank you so much for your service to our country. Thank you so much for serving those who serve. And thank you so much for the incredible work that you're doing with your life. So we're incredibly grateful that you took the time today and for all the work that you do. So thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, and thanks to all of you for joining us today. I hope you have enjoyed the conversation as much as I have. I hope this has helped you better understand health equity and what we can do. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. We will be releasing new content next week on this topic. I hope that you'll rate and review the podcast and share this content with your friends and congregations so we can create a movement throughout Texas to address these challenges that we're discussing. You've clearly made it this far in the podcast, so you obviously appreciate the content. Make sure that you and your congregation are members of Texas Impact by going to texasimpact.org/join. We'll see you next week. Until then, let's get to work.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Engineered by David Basalo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.